The sheep are never safe.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the Fan Run Studios. John Reed, Cam Black, Charlie coming back from D.C. as we kick off this weird holiday week that's already Tuesday that feels like a Thursday. I feel like people are just like, hey, we're going to take this whole week off of work. So anyways, here we are. Tuesday, July 5th. How are you today, Cam?
Doing well. Good to be back in here. Long week. Weekend felt very long. It was a long weekend, but it felt even longer than I thought it was going to. And like you said, it feels weird on the days now. You're not really sure if everybody's just back to normal yet or people easing into it. It was good. I had a good weekend. Can't really complain. Didn't get anything too crazy for the fourth or anything like that. So pretty chill weekend. Just enjoying the free time, I guess. Cooking out, grilling, stuff like that.
You cooked out and grilled?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just classics, you know, burgers, hot dogs, stuff like that.
I got a question.
Yeah.
I had a family get together. We didn't grill. I told you we just get pizza usually.
Yeah.
And I usually draw, it's not really, I guess, a short straw, but I usually, what I bring to the table is I go pick up the food.
Okay.
I'll get there a little early. I ask, you know, my stepsister, my brother-in-law, like, hey, you guys need anything? They're usually, like, trying to get a bunch of stuff set up because they got kids, so they're trying they double. This weekend was doubled as, like, a 4th of July slash, like, birthday party. So there's, like, 30 kids coming.
Oh, jeez.
Or not that many, but, you know, a bunch of people are coming. So, like, hey, yeah, go pick up the pizza for us. I'm like, cool, got it, boom. Pizza Hut. Got 25 pizzas. Go get it. So he gives me $350.
Yep.
I'm like, hey, go get the pizza. Go get it now. It's going to be ready. I show up at 1:30. The guy immediately is like, I told him it's going to be ready at 1:45. I was like, no worries. I'll sit here. Not a big deal. Yeah. I was like, whatever. Then the guy keeps making small talk with me about how much pizza. Like, oh, man, we've been working on this for 2 hours. And the girl's like, yeah, I've had to do all the toppings. I hope you guys like them. Just keep telling me how hard they're, like, having to work for it. I'm like, oh, yeah, our oven's not big enough for all these, so we have to, like, strategically do it with the rest of the orders. I'm like, hey, guys, it's fine. I'm like, I appreciate you. They keep coming by. You need anything to drink? I'm sorry. It's taking long. It's fine. It's fine. It's 2 o'clock. I get out of there. I go to pay for it. It was $338. And I'm just kind of looking there, and I'm like, oh, no. Because I'm, like, in my mind, like, I don't know. You worked at the pizza place. Like, when people do big takeouts, like, I assume, like, a tip was needed. And if a tip wasn't needed, like, they definitely made me feel like a tip was needed by telling me for 30 minutes how hard they had been working on them.
Yeah. When I was in the industry and it was a carryout order,
yeah,
it was always nice, but I don't think we necessarily expected it to the same extent. Like, okay, if you're going through the whole process of doing that and then also having to deliver them all out, that's
sure,
a different story.
Yeah, obviously.
But most of the time, and a lot of people actually didn't really do a lot of carryout. I never really had a ton of really big carryout orders.
Yeah, down where I'm at, like, they won't deliver to where we're coming, so okay, like, I had to go get it, which I didn't mind. It was only, like, you know, a 7-8 minute drive, yeah, whatever. But, like, okay, so you're saying no tip would have been at least not the end of the world for them. They would have been like, oh, okay, that kind of,
yeah, like, I'm sure they were like, oh, let's hope we get tipped on this because,
sure,
you know,
sure,
we're doing all this. But, yeah, for me, I would have been like, yeah, especially because it's the kind of the inside people, too, doing most of it, and
yeah,
they don't usually get tipped on a lot of stuff anyways.
Okay.
Like, yeah, the delivery drivers kind of will help pull pizzas out, things like that, but you're kind of doing that all day anyways if you're in there not delivering anything. So, no, I don't think you're doing the wrong there or anything like that.
Okay. Well, I feel like a jerk, so I just paid for it on my card and left a tip. And then I asked the one guy, I was like, what's standard on this? He's like, he wouldn't tell me. What about that? Like, how is that for protocol? Like, are you allowed to tell me, like, what I'm supposed to tip, what normal people tip or what? Because I was like, I've never picked up 25 pizzas before. Yeah. Like, what's an unusual tip here? He's like, I can't answer that, brother. That's on you. And I was just like, all right, I guess. Which I understand. Yeah. Like, I put him in a weird position, but I feel like I was in a weird position because I was going to pick up pizza. Either. I didn't know what went into the pizza. I don't know like what kind of agreement they had. I don't know.
Yeah, like a lot of time when there's big orders, like especially like when I was around campus and stuff, and like UT would order stuff, they would already have like the tip like
worked into the
basically, and
as in they agreed to a tip or like I think Domino's would just put like a tax on them for like if you order. I didn't know if there was something like gratuity, like you know if you go to a restaurant and you have more than six people, sometimes they'll just go ahead and tack on that gratuity to make sure they don't get you know stiff for whole you know having your table of 10. So
no, it's kind of up to whoever. Like I think the university is technically allowed to tip up to like 22% or something like that
okay.
if it's like paid for by the university.
Okay.
But you will also still get people will be like, hey, I just ordered 30 pizzas. Here's $5 tip.
Yeah,
I've had that happen.
Okay.
Few times, but
well, I didn't know what to do. And again, the small talk. They got me with the small talk.
Yeah.
I guess if I had to sit there at the red light for 30 minutes and have them tell me how long they've been standing there and how hot it is, they might get more money out of me at the red light because I guess I'm a sucker because I was like, oh, man, that does look like it'd be terrible to fix 25 pizzas. And, oh, yeah. So I left the tip, too, the guy took it and showed the girl. And I was like, is this like a good, I left $50.
Yeah.
It was $338. I swiped my card. I was like, I'm just going to charge the dad anyway because like he made me feel like a jerk for sitting here for 30 minutes. I was like, I told him. He gave me money anyways. It's fine. He actually gave me more than I had paid. So I ended up making some money out of this somehow. But like, yeah, it was $338. I left $50.
Okay. Yeah.
But then like he went and showed the girl the receipt. And then I was just like, wait, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Like, are they saying I'm cheap? Or are they saying, oh, wow, this is much more than I thought. Am I a sucker? I don't know. I've asked some people. Some people said, like, a $12 tip would have been fine. If you had $338 and you had $350, just give them that, and they would have been happy with that. You're kind of saying the same thing. That
yeah,
like,
just like, especially because it sounds like they were the in-house people, too.
Yeah, no, they're definitely in-house. I don't even know if they have delivery, really, in where I'm from.
Yeah, like, on the in-house stuff, like, you kind of knew, at least when I worked there, that, like,
you're getting paid, and you're not going to make anything else.
Yeah, you make a higher hourly.
Sure.
And you're not really expecting to make it off tips like the delivery drivers are. So,
yeah.
I think,
okay.
I'm assuming they were just, like, happy that they got that.
Yeah, the more I've talked to people, the more I think it was a good thing, but I didn't know.
That's just kind of also just outside of, like, customer service etiquette. Like, you don't really, well, that, I try not
whole,
to do the
No, the whole thing was outside of customer service etiquette. The whole thing was very awkward, which, again, small town, not really, like, you know, it's, I keep saying that, but, like, I feel like you have to have that, like, backstory to kind of see what kind of people I was working with, or at least a manager. There's not a manager you'd see in most places. No offense to him. He was really on top of my needs to a very annoying extent. But still, yeah, the more I've talked to people, the more people's like, I wouldn't have tipped anything, or maybe $10. To which I'm like, oh, okay. Well, then I got back and I yelled at my brother-in-law. It's like, you're a jerk. And then he claimed that the pizzas were only supposed to be like less than $300, and they added a $50 tip in there already. So they might have double-dipped us.
Oh, then I'd be something else.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, oh, we already agreed to give him a tip on there. And I was like, well, I don't know, man. I didn't get like an itemized thing. I didn't want him to have to print out, you know, 25 pizzas or whatever.
Yeah.
He didn't say anything about it at the time. Neither one of them did. So he might double dipped us. I don't know.
Man, that'd be an ultimate finesse there.
Yeah, maybe that's why he went and showed the receipt, like, got him. I don't know. I don't know.
Huh.
But I've never, you know, ordered 25 pizzas.
Mm-hmm. And you can, like, agree to tip beforehand.
Sure.
Like, you're talking on the phone or whatever, like, you know, they don't include it per se, but, like, if you want to go ahead and do that, you can. So.
I kind of thought my brother-in-law was lying to cover up that, like, he sent me there with only, like, not enough money and, like, that, you know, he claims he did. I don't know. But I felt like a jerk sitting there. And then I felt like a jerk whenever I gave the tip because I was like, okay, did I leave enough of a tip? And then I'm like, maybe it was too big. I don't know. But either way.
You were fine there. You definitely weren't in the wrong by any means.
Well, I hope not. Hell, that $50, apparently, I mean, like, you know, didn't have to leave anything, apparently.
There. Yeah.
I just got shamed one time. I was doing a live stream and had, you know, the pizza come, and it was only like a $13 pizza, and I left like $3, and people were calling me cheap and saying I was awful, so I've been really, like, you know, trying
to.
That's what I said. I was like, what? You know, I've just been really cautious of it, especially in the pizza industry.
Yeah, I just always, if I got 20%, I was like, all right, cool, sweet.
They're like, you got to leave at least 5 on that. I was like, well, that seems extreme, but I was like, you pointed out just 20%. I thought that was good enough, but either way.
Huh, yeah, as long as you aren't like the law school over there at UT, they would order a bunch of pizzas every Friday morning, and they would tip you $5, and it was like 30-something pizzas, and you're just like, yeah. this is wonderful.
That's tough.
Every time. And you knew it was coming every time, too, so you started just snacking more and more, and it's like, it's not going to change the tip. It's still going to be $5. Like,
everyone at your work is all of a sudden calling out on Friday.
Yeah,
like, nah,
yeah, you did
I'm
not want that shift.
Yeah, not doing this. That checks out. Well, that was my 3rd of July. Hot.
Yeah, it was hot.
I've got too many damn kids at the birthday party, so I couldn't even go down the big water slide.
Ah. Was yours like a legit water slide?
Yeah, it was like a big, like when you climb up, like it's like an inflatable one, but like, you know, it can take the adults too. But now the kids are old enough where they got enough friends, like, where it's just a steady stream of like 20 kids going up there.
We got a water slide going with a just basically.
You just had a
slip
and slide,
it looked
like. Yeah, you were slip and slide. And I got PTSD watching you do that, because that's how I hurt my shoulder a couple years ago.
Oh, I'm a little banged up, yeah.
Was going down one of those and, like, landing at the end of the ramp and, like, felt it pop, and I feel like my shoulder hasn't been right since. So I had some PTSD there.
Yeah, I'm still pretty sore from that. It beat me up a little bit.
It's
but
not worth it, is it?
Yeah, it was, like, all great at the time, and I wake it up the next day just like, oh, my gosh, why does everything hurt everywhere?
Yeah.
Finding cuts, everything.
Yeah. I went to play volleyball Thursday night, and sand volleyball, and had a couple dives to get a ball.
Yeah.
It's cool when it works.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When you dive to, like, dig one out, and everyone's like, oh, wow, good dig. And you're like, yeah, thanks. And then, you know, you look and your knee's bleeding, and I'm like, okay, that hurts. But, like, since Thursday, my knee's, like, I guess, been, like, slowly scabbing over, and I'm in so much pain.
Did you get the win?
2-2. Okay. But everyone knows the first game's a warm-up, so yeah. I will say we went 2-1.
Okay. Once you hit the rhythm there.
Yeah, once we hit the rhythm. And, you know, the first couple of games were like, we lost by 2, and then the next 2 we won by like 8 and 10. So, like, we got it going. But I came out with a bloody knee, so was it worth it? Boy, did it cost everything. We'll come back with the sports story of the day after the break. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Your We've got a lot to choose from when it comes to the sports story of the day, just because, you know, been off for a while.
Yeah.
Shout out to a long holiday weekend. You know, maybe the most impressive thing of the weekend was Joey Chestnut.
Yeah. Talk about, just an all-star performance all around from him, just coming in injured.
Just legendary, really. I mean, iconic. I don't throw that around lightly either. I mean, there was the Kobayashi beef.
Yeah.
No pun intended, to start off Joey Chestnut's career. Mm-hmm. He was able to slay the quote-unquote villain, knock off the champ, become the champ. But pretty much since that, you know, third time beating him, there's been no drama with Joey Chestnut.
Yeah, I want him to get another competitor in there.
There just hasn't been anybody step up to Joey Jaws. Until it became Cam, literally just him versus himself. Could he hobble out there with a messed up foot and beat everyone? And then you have a damn protester run out there, and he puts him in a rear-naked chokehold while he's still eating.
Mid-glizzy.
Just glizzy all down his throat, and he's still choking someone out, ironically enough. As he wins another championship, I mean, that was probably the most impressive thing of the sports weekend. We're still waiting on Kevin Durant, but we had a huge trade, both with draft picks and a huge player, figuratively and literally, that will kind of reshape the trade market. We got some sad news with Demaryius Thomas today. We got some more conference realignment rumors firing up when you look at USC and UCLA officially leaving, what the Pac-12 is going to try to do to save the day. And then here locally we have, I guess, the yin and the yang, the good and the evil. One 5-star recruit chooses Tennessee. Another 5-star recruit says thanks but no thanks. What was the bigger story to you, Cam? Jonathan Echols, the 2024 athlete that, you know, some have him as high as number 5 in the country, choosing to come to Tennessee, again, in 2024, or Francis I'm glad I didn't have to learn how to say his last name. Maiga, I don't know.
Maigo?
I watched this thing yesterday on CBS, so I should know how to say it, but I don't.
Yeah.
We're going to call him Francis. What was the bigger story?
I think Francis was, just because you thought you were in a really good position with him, you know, obviously with Nico coming in and just everybody kind of predicting that he was going to come to Tennessee. I've been here twice in like the past couple weeks.
You get the last visit with him.
Yep. So you thought you were in a really good spot with him. And also just the fact that he would have been here sooner than the other guy, I think is a big thing as well. And, you know, you could always use 5-star offensive linemen. So.
Yeah. I mean, 5-star offensive lineman, and again, you know, one with, I don't want to say family ties, but like cultural ties to your quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Like the fit made a lot of sense. You have Nico, and then you get Francis in here, and you have some familiarity between those two. They're friends. They could ball together, and you have a 5-star tackle with a 5-star quarterback. Like it made a lot of sense. I will say this. Really just jaded me. I'd gotten over a lot of my jadedness, Cam.
Mm-hmm.
I'd gotten over my disdain when it came to recruiting and all these damn updates. I'd gotten over it. I'd said, you know what? The money cannon is going boom.
Yep.
Things are going well. You got a 5-star quarterback. That's going to lead to other 5-stars. I bought into it.
Yeah, I think the build-up, too, this weekend as well with I guess it was this past weekend or where you had a couple guys committing as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, it wasn't all bad. You got the guy that you beat out Kentucky for a guy that you're really excited about to come play defensive back. Now,
yep.
I don't know if I would be doing backflips for beating Kentucky, beat Kentucky for a guy you wanted. So, you know, you got two of the three recruits from the weekend you wanted. Yeah. I just, the one you missed on, that's the one that hurts the most. And you know, I don't want to question necessarily the veracity of all the recruiting updates we've been given. I don't want to, you know, question whether or not we're just making things up or if we're trying to be positive and keep momentum going. I don't want to call anyone's credibility into question. That's not what I'm doing here. But like, to me, Francis's recruitment, just I don't know if it was the perfect recruitment when it comes to the new NIL days, where basically schools can get in at the last minute and kind of blow you away. Because like everything from this commit, you know, from this recruitment over the last 3 months has basically been loves Tennessee, might want to stay home at USC. And then it turns into loves Tennessee, might want to stay home at USC. But hey, like Alabama, you know, could you really fault him if he goes to Alabama? Then they get in the mix. And then all of a sudden, like a week before it's time to go, it's like, oh, wait, now actually Miami's really heavily in the mix and USC's kind of out. And some people are saying that Alabama, Nick Saban's trying to keep him away from Tennessee and telling him to stay at Miami to play for his boy Cristobal. So it's like, hey, if you ain't coming here, we trust Mario to develop you. Look at Penei Sewell. That was all Mario. So, like, I'm just like, wait a second. Hold on.
Yeah.
Thought we had to, like, beat USC and, like, getting him out of California. Or getting him, you know, off the West Coast, I guess I should say. Get his family off the West Coast even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of seemed like a sham to an extent, just because of the way they, you know, talk about the bond with Nico, like you said, culturally ties, things like that, and it just made it seem like it was just the dream scenario set up there, basically. And
again, I'm not trying to question the veracity of this. Maybe that was the truth at the moment. Now, I will also say, like, this jaded me and reminded me, like, hey, we should quit hanging on the words of 17, 18-year-old kids because, you know, they changed their mind.
Absolutely. They see a few more dollars, they may easily flip there.
Or, you know, like, Miami is a pretty cool city to be rich in.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, it's hot down there. Like, it's not that different than, like, the West Coast paradise. Like, hey, like, you know, go there and, like, enjoy the beach and enjoy some tropical weather. And, like, it'll be fun. And, oh, by the way, like, you're going to get paid there. And I don't know whose money was longer. If you ask Tennessee people, They're saying Miami blew him away with the NIL offer. When you looked at Miami's messages boards that, you know, before he committed, they were saying Tennessee had a better NIL package. I don't know. It doesn't seem like Miami's always the highest bidder, because if you look at the quarterback commit recruitment that they had where they beat Florida, like the numbers there were apparently Florida offered $11 million, Miami got him for $9.5 million, which obviously $9.5 million, still a huge number. Yeah, like it's not like they're broke boys. I'm not saying that by any means, but I'm saying like the reports where Florida offered more money, but they're like, we don't need the money. We don't necessarily trust what you got going on there. I kind of like what Miami's got going on, so we're going to turn down the extra dollars and we're going to go to Miami. So I'm just saying, like, we don't know who offered the top dollar. Both camps are saying the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be he said, she said, unless you actually see the numbers come out.
Yeah, and, like, who knows? Maybe there's incentives and maybe, like, you can, you know, raise the money. Maybe you can, you know, have made more if you played better. I don't know exactly what the language of these NILs are like. Hey, we're offering you a base guarantee, but we feel good you can come in here and earn extra dollars at autograph signings. Absolutely. And blah, blah, blah. I don't know. All I'm saying is, like, I'm not saying that Miami simply outbid you, because I think that's oversimplifying it.
Yep. Yeah, there's more factors that go into it, obviously. I think the money's going to be close enough that, there's other stuff going on, usually.
At least I hope so. Like, I hope that we didn't just get completely big boy. Although, like, John Ruiz is a billionaire at Miami, and he has said, like, hey, I am going to be the face of getting the U back, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get the U back, and everyone's going to praise me, and I'm going to walk around Miami, and it's like I own a sports team.
I respect that.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the club of, like, being a sports owner and, like, you know, being rich and, like, being the man. You don't necessarily get to buy a college team. Like, you don't get any profits out of this, per se. And maybe, like, if you're giving the NIL deals and, like, they're working through your company, maybe, like, your company will become more valuable. I don't feel maybe, like it is, because I feel like John Ruiz got rich from, like, medical stuff during COVID.
Yeah.
But, like, he gets to walk around Miami with his chest puffed out, and everyone's like, hey, that's the man. Thank you, John. Thank you, John. Thank you, John. We don't have that here. We got, you know, a collective that's trying to keep up.
Yep.
A collective that maybe Cam was just out ahead of everyone a couple months ago, and now people have kind of caught up. I don't think you can argue that Spire led the way when it comes to these collectives, that they were first in terms of getting big dollars and doing this. But, you know, people catch up.
Absolutely. Everybody sees what works for other people, and then everybody's building off that. Like, it's all new for everybody, so it's a learning process.
You had an advantage with it a couple months ago. Maybe you don't have that advantage anymore.
Yep.
Like, maybe that's why, like, you haven't necessarily... Like, you've had the rug pulled out from you twice now. And again, I'm not trying to question anybody's reporting. I'm not trying to question, you know, think that, you know, people are malicious with it or just trying to string people on. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is, like, we had... You know, we had the same kind of situation with Carnell Tate, another 5-star wide receiver.
Yep. We also were getting lots of good vibes about.
Right. Right. And then all of a sudden, it's like, actually, you know, he's going to go to his dream school, at the end of the day. And I'm not blaming the coaching staff. I'm not doing that, because I do think, like, it's hard to beat Ohio State for a wide receiver. Obviously. Look at their pedigree. Look at their track record. Look at the NFL draft. I'm not blaming the coaching staff for that. I'm not blaming the money cannon for not being able to convince him, because Ohio State's a rich program too. And, you know, if they got their collective up to speed and they can offer some money, like, hey, like, you know, what can you do? And I'm not even that upset really about Francis's recruitment, because I do think you can look at Mario Cristobal and say, yeah, he's coached in Alabama. He's coached some really good offensive linemen. Yeah. He went to Oregon and he did it himself. So it's not even like a Billy Napier situation where it's like, yeah, I was on staff with Jesse James, so I'm kind of Jesse James. I know how to rob banks too, because, you know, I sort of knew the best bank robber. That's what Billy Napier has been trying to sell at Florida. Like, hey, I was on some good staffs. I saw how it worked at Alabama. Trust me, I can do this. No. Mario Cristobal went to Oregon and he was doing the same thing. Yeah, and again, he did get a 5-star. I don't even know if Penei Sewell was a 5-star. I assumed he was. But got a guy into the top 5 of the draft is what I meant to say.
Yep. Yeah, he's got the track record.
He does. He does. And he's done it at places like Alabama where, you know, maybe he wasn't the main reason. And, you know, maybe you still look at that as a Nick Saban organization. But he then went out on his own and showed, like, hey, I can still recruit and I can still develop what you're going to be playing here, big man.
Yeah, I think it just really hurts, too, more because it seems like Francis, along with Carnell Tate, seem like these are the kind of players you think you're going to get with a five-star quarterback just because the position as well, like, almost complements that.
Oh, for sure.
So you just like, oh, we're in there because we have that five-star quarterback. And sure. He's got the receiver. He's got the lineman.
And that was the conversation once Nico committed. It was like, look, watch who he brings in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you missed on the walk. I don't even remember the kid's name at this point. I was going to say Walker Merrill, but I know that's not right. The four-star wide receiver that ended up, like, didn't he stay, like, in the Midwest?
Oh, yeah.
White guy, for lack of, for forgetting his name. Or maybe he went to Oregon. He went to Oregon, actually.
Okay. Yeah. I do remember missing on that guy, though.
And you thought you were going to get him. I think he was from Kansas, if I remember correctly. He was from the Midwest, and then went to Oregon. You missed on him. And you're like, okay, that's fine. We still got Cornell Tate. And then you missed on him. And okay, you know, but he's going to get his boy Francis here to come play left tackle, and missed on him. And
yep.
I don't know if it, you know, if the collective is becoming attenuated, like, and it's just like losing its effect, but you know, you've missed out on a couple people in a row, but you're still getting guys. So I don't want to like be all doom and gloom.
Yeah,
we'll talk
yeah.
about some good stuff after the break. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
So you're watching the game and you see another ad for FanDuel Sportsbook and you think to yourself, is that legal here in Tennessee? You betcha. FanDuel Sportsbook is now legal in Tennessee. You can place your first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook risk-free and get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. Seriously, there's no strings attached. Just place any bet you want, and if you win, you'll keep the cash. But if you lose, you'll get your entire bet up to $1,000 back in bonus site credit so you can take another shot at the end zone on the house. And with FanDuel Sportsbook, generous risk-free bets are just the beginning. They've got a simple app, live betting on every game, and exhilarating bet types such as same-game parlays where you can combine multiple bets from one game into a single parlay. And once you win on FanDuel Sportsbook, they get you your winnings in as little as 24 hours. To claim your risk-free bet, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and be sure to sign up using promo code OVERTIME so they know I sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook and promo code OVERTIME.
Must be 21 or older. Present Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789.
Hi, I'm Joseph Shakub with Craigner Group. And while I'm new to Craigner Group, I'm far from new to East Tennessee real estate business. I've been in the game for several years now, and I have never seen a market like this one. If you want to sell your house for as much money as possible, then call me at 865-306-3767 or visit the Craigner Group website at bowknowshouses.com. Let us show you the real estate the right way.
Hey folks, are you tired of long waits and outrageous prices when getting your prescriptions filled? If so, maybe it's time you try National Rx. Located on Kingston Pike in Farragut, National Rx is a locally owned independent pharmacy that specializes in fast, exceptional service and won't price gouge no matter what. Plus, they offer online refills and free delivery. So if you're tired of getting the big box store runaround, give National Rx a call and talk to one of their expert pharmacists about how much time and money you can save by shopping local. You can stop by National Rx in West Knoxville at 11134 Kingston Pike in Farragut, right next to Wendy's. Locally owned and operated, veteran-owned and operated. A true fan-run business if there ever was one. National Rx. Online at nationalrx.com.
Car wrecks happen and when they do,
you're gonna need someone to guide you through.
To make it easier to treat you right.
You're already hurt, so don't get hurt twice.
531-9400, the team for you, that's where you go. Fox and Farmer, attorneys at law, the Car Wreck Pro Attorneys.
Call Fox and Farmer, the Car Wreck Pro Attorneys. If you've been injured in a car wreck, Fox and Farmer has over 100 years of combined experience helping Knoxvillians and all of East Tennessee get the settlements they deserve and are more than happy to give you a free consultation to discuss your case and answer your questions. Give them a call today at 531-9400 or visit foxandfarmer.com.
Fox and Farmer, attorneys at law, the Car Wreck Pro Attorneys.
8900 Executive Park Drive, Knoxville, online at foxandfarmer.com.
We'll be right back.
back on the program. It's not all bad news. I know we focused on, you know, missing the five-star tackle. But, like, hey, Tennessee, and it stinks because, like, if you'd have done it any other day, getting a five-star athlete that's probably apparently going to come here and play tight end, I think is what people think now.
That's what I was seeing, too.
Has experience as, like, an edge rusher.
Mm-hmm.
You would think you'd want an edge rusher. But, like, hey, I mean, I guess having a freak athlete at tight end slash weapon is good for your offense, too. But, like, if you get this guy on any other day, you're probably doing backflips, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You're celebrating. You're saying, wow, look at us. Look at this momentum. Mm-hmm. It just so happened to be the same day that, you know, you missed out on the five-star that you really wanted.
Yeah. Which, you know, 50% hit rate on five-stars wouldn't be terrible in the grand scheme.
That would be great. You are right about that, Cam. So, again, I don't want to, like, you know, say all negative things. And you know, you did, again, land a guy you really wanted this weekend with Christian Conyer, who is a three-star slash four-star, depending on what site you look at. His composite score has him as a three-star.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rivals has him as a four-star. You beat Kentucky for him and ruined that one position coach's day. Did you see that?
I did not see him.
There's a coach that's always tweeting about Tennessee from Kentucky, and he was in his feelings. He was the lead recruiter on this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was tweeting about, you know, basically going through the emotions, going through the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And then was like, actually, let me get back to my day. It's supposed to be the happiest day of my life because it was like his daughter's wedding day. He took time out of his daughter's wedding day to, like,
oh, no, my man's down bad.
Go through his feelings on, like, what happened to what happened and how sad he was.
He took that one really personal, but yeah.
Yeah, oof. He did. But you get the number one player in the state of Kentucky, which some have said, like, you know, Bowling Green, Kentucky is, you know, I mean, it's just right there on the – basically, it's close to Nashville. But you go out and you get a guy from the state right above you, and quite frankly, that's something you should probably do every year here at Tennessee.
Yeah. You should be able to go up there and big boy them.
Unless you're going up against, like, Ohio State, mm-hmm. and it's like a border war and, like, you know – Ohio State beats you for the guy beneath them.
Yeah.
And you can't get the guy above you. Like, that might be okay, but you should be able to get it from Kentucky.
Yeah, if you're going head-to-head with Kentucky, absolutely. Should be able to big boy them in almost anything there.
Some people are really excited about this guy. Some have said, like, you know, it's Tennessee's, like, coaching staff was, like, one of their main priorities, if not the priority, when it comes to the secondary class. They really think this guy's a stud. And who knows? Maybe it's one of those guys that blows up his senior year and all of a sudden, you know, rises in the rankings. But you're able to get him. You're able to get a five-star in the class of 2024.
Yep.
Are we even celebrating that one? Like, I mean, I don't know if that's something, like, you know, it feels like recruiting is never over.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe NIL deals make it harder to flip. Like, if you actually have stuff in place and, like, yeah. Hey, your quote-unquote future.
They basically agreed to sign a contract.
Right.
Extent, you know?
Yeah, like, maybe that changes things and you don't necessarily get the same amount of flips. Maybe this guy gets in board, you know, in the boat and is just like, hey, I'm good with Tennessee. And he basically ideally kickstarts your 2024 class.
Yep.
Right? Because you now have a big five-star and you're going to be up near the top of the rankings because of that.
Absolutely.
And you hope for the quote-unquote Nico effect that you may or may not have gotten here in this 2023 class. Like, just having this one commitment in your boat, and so far you only have one commitment, but you're not necessarily that far behind. Although, damn, Notre Dame's got the number one class in 2024 as well.
Jeez.
They're looking like the number one class in 2023, and they already have one five-star and four four-stars in the next class.
Wow.
That's something to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Also, like you said, recruiting's never done, so that's why you do feel worse about the whole. I feel a little bit worse about losing Francis than you'd feel happy about getting this guy, just because, you know, like, you still got like a year and a half till he'd actually be signing papers.
No, 100%. And that, you know, that's kind of what I was getting at. Like, maybe that's a part of it. It's just like, it's not over.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to be the leader right there and be, you know, have him committed. And like you said, to have the class jump-started a little bit with not being on there. But yeah, it's no guarantee. So you never know. You never know. But hopefully, you know, he stays packed. Hopefully he helps keep recruiting for that class. And you can kind of build off that and get more of those level of guys.
You got to hold off people for a year. And, you know, maybe you do. Like I said, maybe you just get these contracts and these outlines of how much money you can make here. And maybe that, may, you know, has people more focused on staying. But just having Echols in the 2024 class as your only commitment, mm-hmm. like you're already starting with the top 10 class.
Yep.
You grabbed a five-star. There are a finite number of those in each recruiting cycle. You got one.
Absolutely.
And now you just kind of try to start building around that. Even with missing on Francis yesterday, Tennessee still holding down the number 10 class in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Miami does move ahead of you.
Understandable.
Miami moves ahead of you, and they've been heating up, and you know they got 12 commitments, and mm-hmm. and six of them were what you consider blue chippers, or at least you know the five star slash four star. They got their only five star yesterday, and then they got you know 5 4 stars to go along with it. But Tennessee's still in a you know a solid position.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Miami has a lot of momentum right now.
No, Miami, you know, right. we've said it before, and you know, I still stand by it, even though it hurts you yesterday, but like. If Miami is good, that will ultimately play better for you long term. Like there, mm-hmm. there will be a correlation between Miami and Florida. If Miami is really good, chances are Florida is going to be less good.
Yep.
There will be a negative correlation there for Florida.
Absolutely. And it already sounds kind of like we talked about the money difference and still not getting guys. It seems like people are starting to almost already lean that way until they see if you know Napier does anything on the field or anything like that. Maybe, but.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, maybe this turns for Napier, but, like, he might already have to start looking for the 2024 class because, yeah. like, he's starting to lose a bunch of the battles for the big guys in 2023. And, you know, you look at them and, you know, it's still relatively early, although it gets early or it gets late a lot earlier mm-hmm. in recruiting than it used to.
Absolutely.
Not everyone's going, you know, to the, you know, people try to get their position kind of locked in before their senior year these days that they mm-hmm. can focus on ball. That's kind of what Francis said yesterday. He's like, hey, I just want to go ahead and lock this in. That way I can focus on football and academics and, like, know where I'm going. Now, you know, for him, yeah. like, people would have held a spot for him for signing day, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to get it over with and not have to really think about it as much.
Sure. But, like, a lot of these elite guys, like, they don't necessarily wait till the end anymore. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at Florida, you know, right now they're down at number 39, Cam. They're down there trailing Jeez. SMU.
Oh, no.
In Colorado.
SMU's back.
Now, there's still time for that to change, obviously. And SMU has 14 3-stars and just, you know, has more total points and
mm-hmm.
obviously doesn't have the same, you know, caliber.
Quantity.
Yeah, it's just a quality move. But, like, if you're Florida, you're coming from the rear. You're starting way far back.
Yep.
You're getting lapped by South Carolina, who yesterday went out and got a 4-star linebacker. Like, South Carolina's looking better than you right now if you're Florida. So, like, I do think there will be a negative correlation, like I said, when it comes to Miami success and Florida success. So, ultimately, it stings to lose this guy to Miami.
Yeah, absolutely.
And John Ruiz and, you know, I don't know what's bigger than a money cannon. I don't know. A whole damn ship?
Yeah, missile launcher.
Yeah, maybe a money missile launcher. I guess maybe that's it. Like, he's got a money missile launcher, and you're dealing with that, and it hurt yesterday. But, man, like, you know, if you're Miami, you have to be pretty fired up. You went out and you hired the coach yeah. that you wanted, the dream guy, if you will.
Yeah.
And he has responded by getting it going on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, not great that you lost out on the guy, but also if you're going to lose out to a five-star, I'd rather it be Miami than, you know, Florida, Alabama.
Sure.
Like that.
Yeah, so. I mean, grabbing those guys and keeping them out of the SEC. Now, again, it stinks that they beat you for him.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in this situation, you would have wanted him in the SEC because yeah. it meant he would have been on your team. But yeah, the more that like those schools can kind of start poaching away, like I think ultimately the better it'll be for Tennessee, even if this one stings. I'm still blown away by Notre Dame, though.
Like, yeah, I didn't even realize that.
19 commits so far in this class, 17 of them 4 stars or 5 stars.
Jeez. Marcus Freeman up there recruiting.
He is. And then again, I told you next class, like he's already got like four of those blue chippers in board, you know, in the boat already there too. So like he is going to be recruiting, and Notre Dame is going to, you know, be a hot free agent when we look at realignment and the next power struggle. We'll dive into that next and keep you updated on what's going on in the Pac-12. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
Apex.
I don't know if this is good news or bad news if you're trying to keep the Pac-12 alive, but apparently the Pac-12 is getting ready to start trying to, like, finding a new media rights agreement.
I think they're toast.
According to Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, the Pac-12 Board of Directors met this morning and authorized the conference to immediately begin negotiations for its next media rights agreements, which I know that they need a new TV deal. I know they need that. The number I saw, Cam, was like when people were trying to talk about why did USC and UCLA make this move, and it was like Vanderbilt is set to make $80 million next year in TV money. USC and UCLA were set to make $30 million in, like, you know, from their TV rights.
Jeez.
That's how bad of a deal the Pac-12 had.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they need a new TV deal, but I also know that, like, you got to go into negotiations with some sense of strength.
You
can't come in from an absolute position of weakness, which I feel like the Pac-12 is at its weakest that it's ever been, at least, you know, during my lifetime.
Oh, absolutely, and especially just, it seems like a desperation attempt, too, as well, when you're seeing all these reports of the Big 12 trying to poach some of their teams.
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, the Pac-12's at its weakest, which is saying something because it's been really damn weak over the last 6 years.
Yeah.
But also, like, it might be set to getting weaker because we've talked about how both conferences west of the Mississippi, if you will, are now trying to figure out what's next. The Big Ten, the SEC have left them in the dust. The ACC is still kind of sitting around here like, huh, well, I don't know. We'll see what we can do. But meanwhile, the Pac-12 and Big 12 are fighting for their lives, and the Big 12 is trying to stay alive by taking four of the Pac-12 schools right now. Like, they're looking at trying to...
Oh, I saw six.
Okay, I saw four.
Six. There's four that were named specifically.
Okay.
But there are six they're trying to, they want to get, and the other two probably are going to be Oregon and Washington.
Okay,
well.
maybe that's what I missed, but I saw that, like, the Big 12 had started, you know, I guess the league was set to meet on Tuesday with Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado. So you said they're reportedly, like, looking at Washington and who?
Oregon as well.
Okay.
But the issue there is, I think we briefly mentioned it when we were talking about this stuff last Thursday, but they were considering making it like a state law that their public universities have to be in the same conference.
Yeah.
So if they do that, obviously you can't bring in Oregon without Oregon State, Washington without Washington State. That would probably throw a little bit of a wrench in it, and maybe the Big 12 pivots or only just goes with four at that point. But
yeah, I'm sorry. I don't want Oregon State. You guys can stay.
Yeah, basically. So if I'm Oregon and Washington, I'm definitely just like, oh, geez, this is going to drag us down. Like, we don't – rivalry's cool and all, but we don't really need y'all.
Which, I mean, that's what happened to – That's what happened to Oklahoma State, right?
Yeah.
Oklahoma State got left for dead.
Yep. They should, yeah, they're both feeling very left out right now. But, looking to make the Big 12 possibly an 18-team league if they, you know, pull off all the teams that they want. But, yeah, Pac-12 is just in shambles over there.
Well, I guess that's why they're acting as if, like, hey, it's do or die now. Like, go out and find us some money to keep people because it's all a money game and we don't have any right now. And the schools are going to leave and go somewhere where they can get more money and also, like, stay alive. It was really funny seeing, you know, you've seen the Twitter account freezing cold takes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you aren't on Twitter, basically a freezing cold take is something that someone has said either on radio or TV or podcast or tweeted that ages really, really horribly.
Yep.
An example would be someone, and I'm sure there are a lot if you look them up, Jarrett Garantano's the future of Tennessee football. Yeah. I can't wait to watch him play. That would be a freezing cold take. Or saying that Grant Williams is going to struggle against Vanderbilt that one game. And then having him drop 40-something points. Yes, yeah. That would be a freezing cold take.
Absolutely.
I don't know what the opposite is. A burning hot take? I don't know, because hot takes have a negative connotation. I don't know. I don't know what it is when you just nail something. But there was a tweet from 2011 that was recirculating of like some guy having an interview like on a podcast or something that was like,
yeah.
LSU's so-and-so says, eventually this is just going to turn into two leagues. That's one's on Fox and the other's on ESPN. And that was from 2011. And you look and you're like, well, you know, that's exactly where we're headed. It's like Fox is going to have the Big Ten and ESPN is going to have the SEC, and that's all that's going to matter.
Yeah.
And if you believe the rumors, it was ESPN that wanted Missouri and Texas A&M. It was the SEC that's like, hey, how about going to get Texas and Oklahoma while we're at it? It was Fox that looked and said, hey, USC and UCLA would be pretty good in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe those reports, then, yeah, I mean, that's aged about as well as it could.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Problem with the Pac-12 is they ain't got nothing on ESPN or Fox. Like, no one even cares about the Pac-12 network. So they're in trouble. The irony of it all, Cam, is that this might have gotten started. All of this conference realignment that might end college football all got started by the Big 12.
Yep.
Whenever did. They were like, hey, here you go, Texas. Here's your Longhorn Network.
Mm-hmm.
And then that made everyone else in the Big 12 mad.
Yep. Yep. Just extra revenue for them.
Yeah. And that made everyone mad. That's when you started getting people flirting with moving. And, you know, I believe that what the situation was, like, Texas was going to go to the Pac-12 if the Big 12 didn't let them have their network.
That would have been a bad move. The way this is all played out.
I don't know if it would have at the time, because that's when, like, USC was on top of the world. So, like, Texas and USC would have been pretty good. And, like, Texas might have changed the Pac-12 forever. Like, if they had gotten Texas at the time, and then who knows, maybe that leads to Oklahoma, too. Like, maybe they would have been the powerhouse football program. Or at least a powerhouse football program. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it fell through, and, you know, both of those conferences are now bleeding out and dying a slow death. You talk about the potential move, Arizona State, Utah, Colorado going back, and what was the other one? Arizona State?
Yeah, Arizona, yep.
Moving to the moving to the Big 12, what do you think of that? Would that do anything for you?
I think it helps them. As far as the matchups, you're keeping the Arizona State rivalry. For them, as far as money-wise, you're adding Phoenix as a, you know, big market city.
Sure.
You're adding Utah, who adds a rival for BYU, who's coming in.
Keeps that rivalry there. It's a big one, but also brings in a top 10-ish. Or, that's extreme. I was going to say a top 25 program.
Yeah, yeah. And they've like been good as of late. Like they've been around the top 10 as of late. But
I just want to call them a top 10 program.
Yeah,
but like they're a respectable football program that would give you a chance to have.
Yeah.
I don't call them a contender because I never feel like they're championship contenders, but at least would have you playing big games.
And it'd be possible if they're, you know, contending for Big 12 championships off the bat.
For sure.
Especially
for sure.
Once Texas and Oklahoma are gone. But
I meant national championships. But they'd be your best team in conference.
Yeah.
Most likely, year in, year out. You know, maybe them or Oklahoma, but still. I mean, Oklahoma State, excuse me, but.
Yeah, absolutely. And Colorado, I don't really know if that does anything huge for them money wise. Maybe just the nostalgia of them coming back.
I mean, Denver.
Like
I mean, I guess it's like if anybody in Denver cares about Colorado. Plus, it just makes sense like for Colorado to be back in the Big 12. It's where they kind of belong.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's just the size of that conference would probably put some pressure on.
They at least feel like a major conference when you combine it. They're adding Cincinnati, UCF, Houston, and BYU. So, like, be adding eight teams and going from 8 back to 16, and you'd feel like you're an actual, like, big-time conference, even though you might not be. But, like, all those schools that you'd be bringing in, like – or at least a handful of them could also bring something to your basketball conference as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Arizona's a legitimate basketball blue blood. But apparently Arizona State are, you know, hesitant just because they've been, you know, with the Pac-12 since 1978.
Yeah.
So this would basically be the death of the Pac-12 if they looked around and said, yeah, we got to go.
Yeah, but like you said, it's all about the money.
It is all about the money. I just don't know if anybody's going to be ponying up to pay the Pac-12 right now because, you know, what are you buying? Hour one in the books. Kick off hour two of headlines. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.